Some days after Godspeed's ruin, Thomas Balfour had confessed to Lauderback that, in fact, the shipping crate containing Lauderback's documents and personal effects had disappeared from Gibson Key due to a mistake of lading for which no one man seemed to be accountable. Lauderback received this information dispiritedly, but without real interest. Now that the Godspeed was ruined, he had no reason to blackmail Francis Carver, the purpose of which had only been to win his beloved ship back again. The bark's bill of sale, stowed in his trunk among his personal possessions, was no longer of any use to him as leverage. Lauderback had recently taken to playing dice in the evenings, for gambling was a weakness to which he periodically fell prey whenever he felt shamed or out of luck. He demanded, naturally, that Jock and Augustus Smith take up this vice also, for he could not endure to sit at the table alone. They dutifully complied, though their bets were always very cautious, and they bowed out early. Lauderback placed his bets with the grim determination of a man for whom winning would mean inordinately much, and he was as chary of his tokens as he was of his whisky, which he drank very slowly, to make the evening last until the dawn.
"You weren't going to ride back this afternoon, were you?"
he said to Balfour now, with an emphasis that suggested regret.
"Oh, I was," Balfour said. "That is, I am. I mean to be in Hokitika by tea-time."
"Put it off for a day," Lauderback entreated. "Come along to the Guernsey tonight for craps. There's sense to ride back on your own. I have to stay on to cut a ribbon in the morning, but I'll be back in Hokitika by tomorrow noontime. Noontime on the inside."
But Balfour shook his head.
"Can't do it. I've a shipment coming first thing tomorrow morning. Monday sharp."
"Surely you don't need to be present for a shipment."
"Oh, but I need the time to tally up my finances," Balfour said with a grin. "I'm 12 pounds redder than I was on Wednesday, and that's 12 pounds into your pocket, you know. 1 pound for every face of the dice."
Balfour concealed the real reason for his haste, which was that he wished to attend the widow's drinks and speculation in the front room of the Wayfarer's Fortune that evening. He had not spoken of Mrs. Wells to Lauderback since the politician made his confession in the dining room of the Palace Hotel, having judged it prudent to let Lauderback introduce the subject himself and on his own terms. Lauderback, however, had also avoided any mention of her, though Balfour felt that his silence was of a taut and even desperate quality, as though at any moment he might burst out and cry her name.
"That takes me back to my schooling days," Lauderback said. "We got one lash for every pip of the dice, if they caught us. 21 pips on a single die. There's a trivial fact I've never forgotten."
"I won't stay until I'm down 21 pounds, if that's your angle."
"You ought to stay," Lauderback persisted. "Just one more night. You ought to."
"Look at that marvellous fern," said Balfour, and indeed it was marvellous, furled perfectly like the scroll of a violin.
Balfour touched it with the muzzle of his gun. The recent alteration in Lauderback's humour had had a very injurious effect upon his friendship with Thomas Balfour. Balfour was certain that Lauderback had not told him the whole truth about his former dealings with Francis Carver and Crosby Wells, and this exclusion left him very disinclined to pander to him. When Lauderback expressed his dissatisfaction on the subject of Westland and sandbars and cold-cut dinners and disposable collars and imitation and German mustard and the Premier and bones in fish and ostentation and ill-made boots and the rain, Balfour responded with less energy and admiration than he might have done but 1 month prior. Lauderback, to put it plainly, had lost his advantage, and both men knew this to be so. The politician was loath to admit that their friendship had cooled, however. He persisted in speaking to Balfour exactly as he always had done, that is, in a tone that was occasionally supercilious, always declamatory, and very rarely humble. And Balfour, who could be very supercilious himself if only he put his mind to the task, persisted in resenting him. Presently they retrieved their horses, saddled up and set off for Kumara at a slow trot. After they had been riding for a short while, Lauderback took up the thread again.
We had talked of stopping off at Sea View together on the return journey, he said, to take a look at the foundations for the jailhouse.
Yes, said Balfour. You'll have to tell me all about it.
I suppose I'll have to go alone.
Alone? With Jock and Augustus? Alone in a party of three? Lauderback shifted on his saddle, seeming very disgruntled. Presently he said,
What's the jailer's name again? Sheffield?
Balfour glanced at him sharply. Shepherd. George Shepherd.
Shepherd, yes. I wonder if he's angling for a shot at magistrate. He's done very well on the commissioner's budget. To get everything moving so smartly, he's done very well indeed.
I suppose he has.
Hark at that one!
Balfour pointed with the end of his crop at another fern frond, more orange than the first, and furrier.
What a pleasant shape it is, he added. The motion of it, eh? As though it's stilled in motion.
Here's a thought. But Lauderback was not to be distracted by the pleasant shape of ferns.
He's right in the commissioner's pocket, of course, he said, still referring to George Shepherd. And I gather he's the magistrate's old friend.
Perhaps they'll keep it in the family, then.
Smacks of ambition, don't you think? The jailhouse, I mean. His devotion to the project. His devotion to the whole affair. He's done very well about it.
Lauderback, as an ambitious man, was very much the kind to be suspicious of ambition in others. Balfour, however, only snorted.
What?
Said Lauderback.
Nothing,
said Balfour. But it was not nothing. He detested it when a man received moral credit, however distantly, for something undeserved.
What?
Said Lauderback again.
You made a noise.
Well, tally it all up, Balfour said. Timber for the gallows, iron for the fencing, stone for the foundation. 20 navvies on a daily wage.
What? Commissioner's budget, my hat,
Balfour cried.
That money must be coming in from another quarter, from another source. Tally it up in your head.
Lauderback looked across at him.
A private investment? Is that what you mean?
Balfour shrugged. He knew full well that George Shepherd had funded the construction of the jailhouse with Harold Nielsen's commission on Crosby Wells' estate. But he had vowed to keep the secret at the Council of the Crown Hotel, and he did not like to break his promises.
Private investment, you said?
Lauderback persisted.
Listen, said Balfour.